Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Todd Heap will jump on board today, the great Sun Devil and Baltimore Raven, and aspiring analyst, too. I want him to break down what he saw out of the Super Bowl. It's amazing. We're just, not even 48 hours after the game, and there's more debate and more conversation and more being written and said about how Cam Newton acted after the game was over, even more so than Peyton Manning and if he'll retire or not. I think it's just fait accompli on the Manning front, but man, everywhere I go, and then Cam did speak about it. I'm going to talk to Todd Heap on that as well. We'll get to that here in a couple of minutes. Like what the Diamondbacks did yesterday. Look, when the NFL season ends, it really doesn't end. Football never ends. It's a year-round deal, and it's fine. But I'm willing to move on because we've done that through the 4 years here at Sports 360 AZ. We work other stuff in year-round. You know, we do a lot of football because we have a TV show that does it. But, gosh, there's just a ton that's happening. And I jumped on the conference call yesterday with Dave Stewart after they signed Tyler Clipper, and I'll bring some of my thoughts on that to where their bullpen is. And pitchers and catchers are showing up next week. There's some conversation about the Lakers today that's interesting, about Magic Johnson. And I bring up the Lakers because it's going to impact the Suns. The Suns have been lousy at the same time the Lakers have been lousy. That's never a good combination. Because if we look at the history of the Pacific Division and we look in the Western Conference, when the Suns are really good, the Lakers are really good. The Lakers have been better than the Suns. They have all the hardware to prove it. So the Suns have not been able to capitalize while the Lakers have been down. There's some news I'm going to get to on that front out of Magic Johnson. He's doing the circuit today, and some of the things he's talking about are very, very interesting. There's some concussion news I want to get to that's not good. Not that there ever is good concussion news, but I'm never going to take my foot off the pedal on it. And Cardinal fans are asking me about Malik Jackson. I think they should. They're asking about Von Miller. It's a big number. It's a huge number. I know that as a Cardinal fan, if you're sitting there watching the Super Bowl and you see Von Miller coming off the corner, nobody can touch him. And Malik Jackson, they're going to franchise Von Miller anyways, in my view. But Malik Jackson, that's a guy I'd look at. And the report out of Cleveland that Brock Osweiler, the Browns are looking at Brock Osweiler. I'll get into that a little bit later on as the show progresses as well. But I want to go back on Cam Newton and start there today. Okay, so my stance on him before the Cardinals played him in the postseason was, and even during the regular season, it's really annoying to watch a guy jump up and down and celebrate when he gets a first down on his own 29-yard line with 9 minutes to go in the second quarter, and he's got to act and do all the stuff. I don't care about touchdown celebrations. That's part of the game. That stuff it's fine. I could care one way or another. For every Larry Fitzgerald that flips the ball back and runs off to the sideline, there's Cam Newton that does his thing. I liked how the Panthers did give footballs to kids. I thought that was really cool. So all the crushing of Cam Newton came down, and Eric and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but Cam has now advanced the story. When a game ends and you guys are there to hear from the star players on how they react. So Bernie Kosar said that's the fifth quarter. I remember that. There are other players where I will talk to players that are at high school and college and help them with their uhs, you knows, media training, I call it. But a lot of it's just common sense. When you're doing your post-game interviews and the cameras rush out to you on a football field when you're in high school, you don't go to the cameras first. You go to your team. It's just very simple. And when you're in college and you're sitting in front of your locker, you put on a shirt and you put on your hat and you handle your business. I'm not telling you what to say. There's just a decorum about how you go about it. That's a very important time for you. And you also have to understand what people are under. And people have to understand you, though. It's like I would hear this when Randy was pitching for the Diamondbacks. Man, he's really hard to deal with. Oh, Randy's being a pain in the ass. Oh, he didn't pitch well. He's one of the best on the planet. That's who he is. Not everybody is going to be outgoing and gregarious in whatever sport. If a baseball player sits there at his locker after every game because he's a professional, he's taught that way, that's fine. But even a guy like Luis Gonzalez would have an 0 for 5, and while he'd sit there, you could tell it was like the last thing on the face of the planet that he wanted to do. You could go into a Suns locker room, and Dan Majerle would always be there to answer a question. But there were times where Dan Majerle was looking at you like, I want to rip your head off. Larry Fitzgerald is there and available now, but he wasn't there early in his career. If we remember Larry Fitzgerald, remember Fitz running off the field and out of the locker room, that stuff happened. So while everybody wants to kick Cam Newton when he's down on this one, and I can't believe our country and our sporting world is leading with how Cam Newton acted out of a game, and I've got to sit here and talk about it too because it just annoys the crud out of me. It's almost like there's nothing else going on, so let's talk about Cam Newton. Well, no, there's plenty going on, so we don't really need to, but I'll address it. Cam Newton defended how he handled himself with the media after his team lost, saying that, quote, he's a sore loser. If you don't run across a guy who's pissed that they lost, then you're not going to find greatness. There are days where I do this show where I'm not happy at all. There's days where I do this show and Jared Nielsen knows I'm not happy. And Eric knows I'm not happy. And there's days where I do the show and they're not happy with me because they aspire. I'm not saying we're the greatest thing ever. There are days where you guys go to work and you do your job and you just get in your car and you go home and you don't care how it went. That's just how you're wired. But the guy who's running the company or the boss may be sitting there saying, I expect more. I have a talented team. I want more out of them. Thus, those talented teammates need to rise their game up. Hold one another accountable. Hold themselves accountable. And so for Cam Newton to say he's a sore loser, would he use different terms when he's 29, 30, 31? Probably. So just to pile on him because you don't like him, I think there's just a lot of that. There's people in our industry, and not all of them. There's very, very talented people. Our industry's hard. Our industry's not easy where you just walk on in, oh, hey, how's it going? And you have to put each situation, each player contextually into play. Was it 10 minutes after the Super Bowl ended? Was it 2 minutes after the Super Bowl ended? Was he distracted by something else? Did he not want to be there? Obviously, he didn't. But he did the best that he could do in that moment. He didn't apologize. He said, quote, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. He said, if he offended anyone, that's cool, and said he would not change his persona to appease anyone. Now that's the part where you go, dude, for all the goodwill that you've built up and for all the stuff that you've done, and had people excited to watch you play, not just in Carolina, not just in Charlotte, but across the country, all the jerseys you've sold. To say you're not going to change your persona to appease anyone, how about just saying maybe I can handle the situation better next time? People are pretty forgiving. Not everybody lives in the fishbowl of sports every day. And there are going to be people that want to use you as a spokesperson, and they will use you even with this. And there'll be others when your career is done that would say, you know what, I'm not touching that person. It happens. Newton had not spoken to the media in his previous four seasons on the days players clean out their lockers. But he felt compelled to talk this morning about the criticism of him. Quote, I've got no more tears to cry. I've obviously had a lot of time to think about it. I've seen so much blown out of proportion. So I don't know about the tears to cry part. But I also don't know what it's like to sit there on the doorstep of winning a Super Bowl and putting everything that you've got into it, and all of a sudden, it's just over. And you didn't play well, and they kicked your tail from one side of the field to the other, the Broncos did. So yeah, it's pretty easy to sit behind a microphone and say, well, he should have said this, and he should have handled his way, should have handled it that way. I don't know all the stuff there, but from a distance, as I look at this, because I've done this for 30 years, there's some blame to him, but I'm not going to pile on him. I'm not going to pile on him. And whoever is in his inner circle, unless they're all just saying, oh, yeah, Cam, you're the greatest. Oh, yeah, Cam, you got to figure it out. Oh, Cam, yeah, you got it right. Because there's probably a lot of that going on. It's who are the real guys that can sit him down and say, look, you handled yourself piss poor after the Super Bowl. We can put you in a pink sweater and sit you on the couch at the Today Show and have you go do Colbert, and we can remake your image. Not that I'm suggesting that, but there's people that could do that with him. Is he open to that, or is he always just going to be defiant? And if he's going to be this way 5 years from now, then he's not going to have a whole lot hanging around after he's done playing. Plain and simple. There's a very talented high school player that for some reason sent me a note asking if I'm going to put him on a list. We do some lists here, not many. Jared and Jason do the recruiting roundup. So we have parents that are always trying to get our attention to do something on their kid, even if they have two left feet and can't play and don't like the game. And there's lots of those. But I had a player who sent me a note last night asking if I'm going to put him on his list. And I usually don't pay much attention to it, but I'm sitting there and I look at this and I write back, how are your grades? Are you going to do some sports in the spring? How are you handling your business around school? Because this kid's a high-profile kid already. He's already way up there. And if you can handle all that stuff, we'll see where you are a year from now. By the way, do you have some teammates that you think we should be looking out for? And I wanted to see what his response was. And he sent me back like five names and said, got it, sir. I'll work on some things. It's fine. Take the time to mentor. Brock Osweiler. So if you're the Denver Broncos, you've got to just walk away from Peyton Manning at some point. We all see it. And the easiest thing to do is if Peyton just holds the press conference and says, I'm done. I'm done. I'm finished. It's been a great run. I am out. Thank you for playing. But if he says, you know, boy, I really like to play a little bit more, then the Broncos have to decide, okay, Peyton Manning or not. And it's John Elway who's sitting there in the control seat, by the way. No, you're done. See you. We have Brock Osweiler here. Peyton, you're going to go play for the LA Rams, which would then immediately be a really interesting conversation for the Cardinal fans to see him out on the field. So while we're all expecting Peyton Manning to just say, yes, I'm done, and I'm getting, you know, it's a couple days now. If we're sitting here a week or two from now, really, you need that much time to figure it out? Let me pop in a tape from 5 years ago. It's not going to get any better than this. And he can just already have the job lined up with CBS to be the in-studio analyst or be on the number one announced team with Jim Nantz and Phil Simms, and maybe Phil goes to number two. But wherever Peyton Manning goes, he's not going to start out doing college football games in the WAC and then working his way up to get good. That's not going to happen. NBC will be all over him. Now that NBC has some Thursday night games, you could put Al Michaels and Peyton Manning together. It's too easy. That is kind of hanging around there. So the story in Cleveland of how the Browns would be interested in Brock Osweiler or with the second pick take Jared Goff. Now, the Browns have been a train wreck for a long, long time. And I'd even say this, if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you have to consider all options, Carson's not going to be here in 2 or 3 years, from my view, maybe even less than that. So when quarterbacks become available and you're Bruce Arians and you're Steve Keim and as aggressive as they are, you have to look and consider every last option. Even a guy like Brock Osweiler if he were to come open. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying you have to look at everybody. A little bit later, I'm going to get into the Suns. They did their job last night, although for a while I thought they were going to screw it up. They were actually leading. You cannot, if you're the Suns, you can't lead in a game. Understand this. Do not screw this up. And I like what the Diamondbacks did. I was on a conference call yesterday with Dave Stewart. I'll bring you some of that a little bit later on as well. Up next, Todd Heap, former Sun Devil, Baltimore Raven, aspiring NFL analyst. He is next, sitting in the seat. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. The great former Arizona State Sun Devil, Todd Heap, now with us for a couple of minutes. Of course, great Baltimore Raven tight end as well. What was your big takeaway or two from Super Bowl Sunday?
there was a few takeaways. I think the biggest one for me was just Peyton Manning's career and the way he was able to come out on top. If anybody loves football, you got to love the way Peyton Manning has done it, the way he's handled himself. And the way he was able to finish is just kind of icing on the cake. But I've watched him for a long time. I've always been a fan of his. always enjoyed being around him, enjoyed playing with him at the Pro Bowl. He's just a classy guy, and I'm really happy for the way he was able to win that Super Bowl, and I'm hoping he calls it, because that's a great way to go out.
What's a guy go through when they call it? You know, you had to go through that. You were hurt at the end, but you had to go through it as well. It can't be easy. Or in his case, it seems like a no-brainer, Todd. I mean, come on, you won the Super Bowl. This should be very simple for Peyton.
Well, I think, you know, Peyton puts a lot of thought into what he does. It's not an easy decision. I don't care when or how it happens, and it's different for every single person. But I like his approach to it. You know, I don't think he should, you know, said anything right after the Super Bowl.
Right.
I liked his approach to let it sink in and make a decision when all the emotions are out of it. You know, let the team enjoy the win. Let's not talk about his you know, pending retirement. Let's talk about the Super Bowl victory and focus on all the great players and the great guys on that team that helped lead him to that game.
Talking with Todd Heap, Cam Newton earlier today in Carolina said that he is, quote, a sore loser. He has received a ton of criticism for how he handled his post-Super Bowl press conference. I'm kind of mixed on that one, because in the heat of the moment, I've never lost a Super Bowl in my mid-20s. You know, I've never done that. But at the same time, is there an obligation to give a little bit more? Should he have had more of a cooling off period? There's a lot there with Cam Newton. Where do you come down on how he handled himself after the game?
Well, I mean, he said he's a sore loser, and you know, I'm the same way. I mean, that's a tough position to be in. Nobody's going to be excited to sit up there and talk to the media. There's plenty of games where, you know, I was super frustrated after the game and not wanted to talk to the media. But you know, his comment was, you know, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser,
right?
Or something to that extent. And I can name plenty of guys that have stood up there and after a tough loss, you know, handled themselves in a different manner and still go on to win Super Bowls. You know, we're looking at one that just won a Super Bowl, you know, a couple of days ago. So I don't know if I'd buy into that. I think consistency and humility and handling yourself the same way all the time, there's a lot to be said for that.
It's a maturation process, though, right? I mean, you probably played with guys that didn't handle themselves well when they first got into the league, but by the end of the league, you could look at them and say, they got it figured out.
Yeah, I've seen that process for a lot of guys as well. You know, and everybody matures at a different pace. And I'm with you as far as that's concerned as well, because there's, you know, it's not an easy place to be. You've got hundreds of millions of people watching you, and you put all that pressure on yourself, and you want to perform well. And when it doesn't go well, you know, that's kind of when you have to look inside yourself and see what you have to do next. And you know, some people get to that point quicker than others, and you know, I don't think it will affect him going forward. I think he's still a great player, and you know, I've been super impressed with how he's played on the football field. You know, I just obviously hope that he's able to mature and get past these things.
Talking with Todd Heap, if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you look at the Carolina Panthers, it's not insurmountable to be there next year. It's not like it's a dynasty, at least from my view. Would you agree with that, or do you see that Carolina clearly has the NFC lapped?
I don't know that I agree with that. I think every year is a new year. There's so many different things that can happen in the off season, and you know, there's so much parity in football. You got to consider injuries. You got to consider scheduling. You got to consider, you know, how their games are set up, road trips here and there. There's so many factors that go into it. I don't think you can ever put a lock on any team. Of course, you're going to have teams that are going to be in the hunt. I definitely think the Cardinals and the Panthers are going to be in the hunt next year, but just because of the depth that they have and the, you know, how well they played this year and the way they did it, I don't think that's going away. I don't think that it was something that was a fluke this year.
There is no off season really in the NFL. Todd, from my view. These few weeks now we're leading up to the NFL Combine. The NFL calendar starts the first week in March. Before you know it, you have the draft, you have off-season workouts. When you go through a season, give the fans an idea of how much time do you have to decompress before you crank it right back up and get into that routine. Is it a couple weeks? Is it a couple months? Is it player by player? What's it like in off-season before you get back into working out in the weight room and focusing on your craft?
Well, I think it is player by player, and it obviously has to do with what happened the year prior. You know, every year you go, you got to kind of take an account and assessment of where you're at, how your body's feeling. There was a couple times, you know, where for me there wasn't any time off. You go straight to rehabbing and straight back into working out because you don't have enough time that you need to get healthy for the following season. So it's different year to year, and you know, there was years where you get, you feel like, okay, a month was great, and then I got to start getting after it. But for the most part, it's a year-round deal. You're trying to get a leg up on somebody else, so you want to put in as much work as you can all the time, and try not to take too much time off to set yourself back. And you know, like I said, it's different for different guys, but that was always my approach.
What about a guy like Carson Palmer who ends on such a thud in a regular season game, or a postseason game, I should say, in the NFC title game? What advice would you give to somebody like that, that you've got to get away far, far away, or come right back to it?
I think Carson's a guy that knows how to handle it. He's been doing it for long enough to where, I think he's always been able to prioritize and kind of set straight what he needs to do. You know, he's a family guy. He puts his family first, and that's the most important thing. You got to make sure your family's okay and spend a lot of time with them in the off season. But he's also a guy that works hard too. You know, he puts in a lot of effort and a lot of work into preparing, into rehabbing, into making sure he's ready to go for the season. So I see him handling it correctly. You know, it's like I said, and we've talked about this before. It's different for each guy, mm-hmm. And your personality kind of controls that. And some guys handle it better than others, and you see it show up. Usually in training camp, you see the guys that have put in the work and show up and are ready to go, and the guys that haven't. And some of those guys can get it back, you know, within a few days, and some can get it back within a few weeks, and some don't ever get it back. So. It's like I said, it's the same as in any other job. You see the guys that are prepared and that are ready to go and the guys that aren't.
And in a long postseason run, does it make any difference? You know, it's not like the other teams that didn't make it and they're done at the end of December. These guys are still playing games all the way through till, you know, and at a high level game. Does that make any difference in an off season for a player when your final game is of the magnitude of an NFC title game in terms of bouncing back?
Well, I think it can take a toll. I mean, and you're always, so many guys, you go throughout a season and you're playing hurt. And the closer you get to the playoffs and the further you get along in the playoffs, some guys are playing injured. And so there's that takes a toll throughout an off season. There's off seasons where I went, you know, in 08, I played the three games in the playoffs with a back injury, and it took me 6 months all the way up until training camp, you know, wondering if I was even going to be able to play the next year. And so those things they happen on every team. There's, you know, a couple guys that are playing through serious injuries in this Super Bowl, not being hurt. They were playing through injuries,
right?
You know, that are going to take a lot of time to heal and to get back. And so those things take a toll on a team. And going into the next season, it's up to the individual player to put in the time and the work, and then you have to bring that together as a team when you get to training camp.
Good stuff. I appreciate catching up with you on a number of subjects. Stay well. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Todd Heap with us there. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Plenty of content up on our website at sports360az.com. Thanks again to Todd Heap. Good stuff there. So the NFL, I'm sticking with a lot of NFL today, but this is a really interesting story to me, and I'm sure it is to you too when you hear about it. So we're now coming into the draft season. The combine is in a couple of weeks in Indianapolis, and the NFL has sent out a memo that they are no longer going to allow players with convictions for domestic violence, sexual assault, or weapons offenses to attend the combine. Teams were informed of this policy change in a memo from Troy Vincent late last month, who's the VP of football operations. So in this memo, Vincent wrote that invited prospects would be barred from any league-related event if a background check turns up a felony or misdemeanor conviction. That's pretty strong. Players that refuse to submit to a background check will also be uninvited. It also means those players will not be invited to the draft. So I'm thinking of Jameis Winston already, but the thing on Jameis Winston was he was never convicted of sexual assault while he was at Florida State. Whether I agree with that or disagree with that makes no difference. He was never convicted. So there's going to come a point in time, there just is, where there's going to be a high-profile player in college, and there's going to be something there. And when that player goes out and it's found out that he is not invited to the combine, he's not invited to the draft, some team's going to take him anyways. That's going to happen. The rules expected to impact only a handful of players each year. That's the NFL's thought, that it's only going to impact a handful. I don't know. Society's kind of funny in that way. More than 300 players attend the combine each February. They meet with teams and all that stuff. So that's interesting coming from the NFL. That's a pretty strong stance. The other story around the football, and I'm going to move over to some other things in the next segment, is adults who suffer a concussion are at three times the long-term risk of suicide compared to the general population. This is according to a new study from Canada. So we do concussions, and we do them well. We talk about them. We've brought people on. We've even did the movie. Some didn't agree with it. Some did not. Bennett Omalu, who spoke last week up in San Francisco, three times the long-term risk of suicide compared to the general population. Unlike some previous research, the new work focused on adults in the general population rather than either athletes or military personnel with head injuries. For years, there have been examples of serious head injuries leading to potential cases of suicide in military veterans and professional athletes, according to Donald Riedmeyer of the University of Toronto in Ontario. I was worried that even mild concussions acquired in normal community settings might also be a risk and might cause lasting damage. So the concussion story is not going to go away. When I heard Commissioner Goodell last week talk about it, and said that the league is trying to do all they can do and players are self-reporting it, they don't always self-report it. And we saw the example last year. It was the Ravens game. Quarterback stayed on the field, shouldn't have been out there. And then, well, why wasn't he taken off the field? So these are the issues that are facing the league, and they're issues that the league's impenetrable as it stands right now. I'm not sitting here hating on the NFL. It's just these are the issues that go along with it. Like anything, there's some side effects. Even something that's really, really good, there's side effects. There's things that aren't so healthy for you if you're consuming it or taking part in it. Now over to the Suns. The Suns did the right thing last night. They lost. I'm very pleased with how they played last night. They played just well enough to make it interesting. And I was in my office working on some things. It was like, I don't know, 9 o'clock, and it was maybe a 4-point game. And the next thing I knew, Oklahoma City was closing in on 120. It was just over. Steamrolled, crushed them. Kevin Durant at 32. Suns a win by losing and continue their quest to get the top overall pick in this year's NBA draft. They almost got lucky last night. The Clippers had to go to overtime to beat Philadelphia. You got to be rooting for teams like Philadelphia to win games. And if you're one of those that wants the Suns to win, then you just are wanting to be mired in mediocrity forever. And it's no fun. It's these last 6 years have not been fun. So tomorrow night when they play Golden State, I hope Golden State puts up 150 on them. and Steph and Clay go crazy on him tomorrow night. Just because I do like some of the parts. Just because I want them to lose doesn't mean I don't want them to play well. Just play well enough to lose. And they're plenty capable of doing that. They have just enough to lose most every game going forward. But I do like Devin Booker. The more that I watch him play, the more I'm expecting him to hit that wall. We're coming up to the All-Star break. He's going to go to the three-point contest. You usually see it in rookies where all of a sudden they're playing pretty well, and then boom, they just hit this wall of like, oh my gosh, I didn't play this many games in high school. I didn't play this many games in college. I didn't play as, and all of a sudden you're just done. You're gassed. You're on the AAU circuit in high school. You're playing games morning, noon, and night. This kid, though, looks like he's going to be just fine. But it was, as much as I like watching him play, there's not many pieces there. So you know you could build around him. Go get a very, very, very high draft pick. Don't settle for, you know, five or lower. Be really bad. Finish in your top five. You're going to be able to attract a better coach. And I'll get to that in a minute. You're going to be able to attract a better, bigger name coach when you show that I have a lottery pick. I got a pretty good young collection of talent here. And, you know, the West is going to go through a changeover here shortly. If we go through the Western Conference, Kevin Durant's probably going to leave Oklahoma City. If you look at San Antonio, at some point, someday, I don't know what day Tim Duncan's going to be wheeled out on a wheelchair, but it's going to happen. And Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker and that whole thing's going to change over. They keep retooling down there with LaMarcus Aldridge, but at some point, they're not going to be what they are. The Clippers, I think if they don't make it into the postseason, I'm already hearing this around the league, that Doc Rivers is going to be someone that, when I say playoffs, they don't make it to the finals, they may come to a point where they blow that thing up. And the Blake Griffin hand injury makes it even more interesting. And that takes me over to the Lakers. So the Lakers, Magic Johnson has been doing the media circuit this morning. And some friend of mine out in L.A. had said, you know, there's been some rumblings about Jim Buss finally being moved out and Jeannie Buss and maybe even Mitch Kupchak all being blown out. And Magic, maybe, when I see him do media events like this, it makes me believe he's starting to circle the wagons and say, let me get involved in this. Because there's a whole lot of moving parts. Phil Jackson, married to Jeannie Buss, blows out Derek Fisher this week. So the Knicks are a mess. Is Phil Jackson looking at ownership and getting out of New York and coming to L.A.? Would Magic want to open it? There's a preemptive strike on all this stuff. And if Byron Scott gets blown out, could the Lakers' job come open? Well, now if you're the Suns, because to recapture the energy of the Suns of what they were six long, hard years ago, they're going to have to go out and go much deeper in the coaching pool search, in my view, to get people back and interested. You know, so now you have the Knicks job that's open. You have the Suns job that's open. If the Lakers job comes open, okay, you look at destinations of where you want to coach. And if you're the big name guys, you want to go to New York. That thing never gets figured out. You want to go to LA, run the Lakers. That thing never gets figured out, at least now that Kobe's leaving. And you can go back to the Mike Brown, Mike D'Antoni, and all the circus around Jim Buss since the late, great Jerry Buss passed away. If Doc Rivers gets his ticket punched because if the Clippers don't have a good season, and a good season meaning making it to the finals, all of a sudden you're looking around and you're saying, gosh, there's a lot of jobs, and Phoenix is just kind of, yeah. Phoenix is the place where longtime NBA assistant coach, Phoenix is like, and Mike Budenholzer is a good coach. I'm not going to say that, but anything disparaging towards Mike, but that's what the Suns are going to be left for, is the longtime NBA veteran assistant who's ready to have a coaching job, who's not going to create a whole lot of buzz. And I'm not a guy that feels like you have to have buzz all the time, but there are certain cases, and the Suns are certainly in that case. Whether it's coach, whether it's free agent, this coming summer, so we're not in this malaise for another year. Being irrelevant is not fun if you're the Phoenix Suns in the marketplace. It's just not. So this would not be good if the Lakers job comes open, in my view. and they bring some people in and they get the Lakers situation figured out, and all of a sudden the Suns are going through another cycle. Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. The Diamondbacks make some very, very good moves yesterday. I'll get to that on the other side. Stay with us. It is nice to know that we're going to have a baseball team that doesn't stink. It is. Because there's many cities where they're already just going to go into mode of, what are we going to do here for the next 6 months before we get into the next cycle of football? And in our sports market, we're better than that. We draw 618,000 people for a golf tournament that didn't have Jordan Spieth in it, that didn't have Tiger Woods in it, that didn't have Rory McIlroy in it. We draw 618,000 people. We can do big events here. We do them well. A year from now, we'll have the Final Four here next March. And it's the Final Four, by far, is the best sporting event to go cover. By far. And I've done lots of Super Bowls. I've never done a Daytona 500. I've heard that's a kick in the head. I've never done the Kentucky Derby. Heard that's one I need to do. But I've done most everything else. And I've done the World Series, done NBA Finals when I was out in L.A., done NHL Finals when I was out in L.A. So I would love to get back into a pennant race mode here. It's been a while. And the Diamondbacks did a couple things yesterday. I'm not saying that they're there yet. You know, I look at the Dodgers, and I think there's a lot of questions there. I look at the Giants, and I feel like if you're putting all your eggs into Jeff Samardzija's basket, then that's not a very big basket for their starting rotation. The Diamondbacks yesterday, they did a couple things. So A.J. Pollock gets a two-year extension, which is good. He can just go focus on baseball. He's a very talented young player. Dave Stewart said a couple weeks ago that the bullpen was still an area that he was looking at. And while the team did not get Howie Kendrick, and why I would have liked to have seen Howie Kendrick come here at second base after the Aaron Hill deal, the Diamondbacks did something yesterday. They get right-handed pitcher Tyler Clippard. So Tyler Clippard can save and set up. He can do both. And Brad Ziegler saved 30 games last year. It's not like Brad Ziegler's a stiff down there. He can get it done. I just feel like that maybe this bullpen needs a little bit more of a hammer. I don't know if Tyler Clippard was out of gas last August when the Mets used him a ton. It seemed like he was in the postseason. But if you're a Diamondback fan today, the team's better than it was last week at this time. They have another arm down in their bullpen. It seems to me that this year, much more so in the La Russa Stewart era, last year was, let's just sort through each one of these parts one by one. It's not going to be pretty. And yet they almost finished at 500. They clearly have enough offense. Last season, their offense got better and better. I think Tomas can be better for them this year in right field. He faded, in my opinion, down the stretch. Another year of Goldschmidt, figure out third base. You got a couple shortstops. You got one you could put over at second. And there's a lot to like. It's just a lot to like about coming into spring. So for them to go out and make this move in the bullpen, and Dave Stewart on the conference call said yesterday, and I asked him about it, said, are you happy with this bullpen top to bottom? And he said, no. Usually you get guys that are going to say the let's get the fans excited thing by saying, oh, yeah, we have the best bullpen going. Of course we do, even though we don't know what we're going to do with this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. Fact of the matter is, I think this is going to be a team that you're going to like, a team that's going to be embraceable. It already is with Paul Goldschmidt. Zach Greinke's not going to get people all excited in the way of how he talks or what he does out in the community, because he's a quiet guy. He's a quiet, private guy. In fact, a big part of his contract, from my understanding, the day they signed, he's the one that went to them and said, I want to know about some certain charities around the Valley that I want to get involved with. He's not seeking that out, but he knows that's the right thing to do. And every fifth day, you're going to watch him pitch, and every fifth day, there's going to be people that tune in to watch him pitch, because we haven't had a Zach Greinke here since Kurt or Randy. It's just how it is. And Shelby Miller, too. I mean, Shelby Miller's going to be fine. But as I'm getting ready for the start of the spring training next week with the guys and what we do here in our little slice of heaven on the site, there's a lot to like this year. I mean, a year ago, we were talking about Archie Bradley. Now he's barely even brought up in conversation around this team. I don't know if that's just a message to him to grow up. they've had enough of him, if he's not going to come back. I don't know. A year ago, we're talking about Josh Colemanter first and foremost. There's no offense to Josh Colemanter, but he's not Zach Greinke. He's not Shelby Miller. He's not Patrick Corbin. So these are two very solid moves by the organization yesterday. Pressure is off Pollock. He's going to be in that position when it's arbitration, where he's going to be compared to others. And he's just got a tremendous upside to him. Huge ceiling. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Plenty of content up on our website at Sports360AZ.com. We have our TV show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. 6, 10, 30, 1, 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, I think. That rolls there. You can check out our content, of course, on our website at Sports360AZ.com as well. Thanks for being with us.